This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Deion Walker, the Bills' fourth-round pick, defensive tackle. He's the big-body space eater. If you were someone that thought you were on this, Joe, big time, they're not going to spend their premium asset, their number one asset, on a big guy in the middle. They're a defense that doesn't use that much. And sure enough, what do? They went corner in the first round, then penetrating defensive tackle in the second.
Uh-huh.
And in the third round, it ends up being defensive end, and then back for the big space-eating guy that maybe they can see if they can make something out of him.
Quickly on Walker, because we want to get to calls here. I actually, for the defensive tackle they ended up with, I want to listen to Marino again on this. Actually, I heard Joe Marino, Locked On Bills, over the weekend talking about how this was one of the five guys he didn't want to see the Bills draft. The reason I kind of am into the idea of him being the big body space eater defensive tackle that they drafted is his value doesn't seem to be in being the big body space eater. Like, I heard Joe call him a finesse player for his size. He's 6'7", 330, but he plays more like a finesse player. Lance Zierlein at NFL.com, he talked a lot about more of Walker's pass rush ability than his ability to fill up blocks and stop the run. His NFL comparison to NFL.com was Jordan Phillips. 7.5 sacks last year. Yep. Like, to me, I get it. Like, they needed a one technique, eat up those blocks. I feel like the guy they drafted doesn't have to come off the field on third downs.
Okay.
I feel like if he hits, if he becomes like a real NFL player, I feel like, I mean, if he's going to be Jordan Phillips, what was Jordan Phillips at his best? I don't remember him as the guy that was, you know, great run stuffer. It was, no, he had 9 sacks in a season for the Bills. So.
803-0550. Along the way, Bean also said that Dwayne Carter could be a one technique guy for them.
Yes.
He then took Deion Walker after making that comment. Right? As the timeline of that, the weekend. 803-0550. Yeah. Brian in Arcade leads us off this morning. Hey, Brian, good morning.
Hey, guys. Yeah, more of the same on wide receiver. I mean, this is Bean's MO. This is how they want to build a team. I think he's left it with a house of cards. We have cut to the bone at wide receiver. And what I mean by that is now, like, Curtis Samuel has to play. He cannot spend time just injured. Keon Coleman has to improve. Like, he has to be good. Because you have 4 field-worthy wide receivers right now, unless you think Laviska Shenault is going to be on the field in a meaningful way. He hasn't played in a meaningful way since 2021 is the last time he was a receiver. I mean, you look at Bean's record in the draft. It's indisputable now. He's had 8 drafts. He's picked 9 wide receivers. Let's go through the resume. McLeod in the 6th. Prohl in the 7th. Stevenson in the 6th. Gabe Davis in the 4th. Hodgson 6th. Shakir 5th. Shorter 5th. Coleman 2nd. Prather 7th. Your average round is 5.2. Oh, but what about Diggs? He used a first for Diggs. Yeah, that takes the average to 4.9. I mean, I think it is very clear this team does not give a rip about giving Josh Allen a good wide receiver. They got him Diggs, and then they stopped. From that point on, they stopped. Emmanuel Sanders was the beginning of the end. You had to talk that guy out of the retirement, and then from that point on, it has been just a pipeline, a conveyor belt of just has-beens in the league. And his free agents, of course, aren't any better. You can go through that list, too. I mean, now you are depending on Josh Palmer, a guy who has never had more than 770 yards receiving in the NFL or in college, to be your best perimeter outside receiver. And he worked with Justin Herbert. Allen is completely left out to dry on this team. I mean, you talk about, oh, well, we could just trade James Cook. We don't need him. He's going to have to carry the ball 300 times. I mean, who's going to be your number one back? Ray Davis? It's insane to me how we have ended up in this spot with the best player this team, this franchise has ever had. It's either him or Bruce Smith, for the most talented ever. And you are sitting here every year, it's like this. Oh, well, it wasn't the right time for wide receiver. It wasn't the right time. Meanwhile, Savion Williams goes off. Green Bay has completely loaded up. At this point, you would be on your knees thanking them for, like, Bo Melton. Like, hopefully they can get rid of some of their extra. Their top six is incredible. You need to drill Bean about this, because how do you expect to compete against the Bengals, the Chiefs? You didn't even get to the Super Bowl. You got halfway through the playoffs and you were out. How do you expect this to work every year?
Thanks, Brian. The answer is, I mean, they trust Josh Allen. And, you know, like, grilling Bean, I'll ask him. I've got questions about it. I've got questions about how, you know, when he says, he kind of admitted, I'm surprised I didn't take a receiver until the seventh round. Like, that just treats it like, oh, you forgot something at the grocery store. Like, I think it's an important position. Can they still win without it? They sure can. I think they could win the Super Bowl with the roster they have right now, because you kind of can't overstate how much Josh Allen can lift you up and do everything for you. But to the Packers' point, like, the Packers, it's almost comical. The Packers were the team. Hey, what about the Packers model?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you listen to this show, I thought that's ridiculous. They just have a bunch of young guys. They draft receivers, and they are seeking a number one, and they drafted two of the top 12 receiver prospects in the draft, Matthew Golden and Savion Williams. Like, so the Packers model isn't even real anymore. I don't know. Maybe next year it's an offense-heavy draft. Last year was offense heavy. This year was defense heavy. Maybe they go back and forth. I mean, Bean is trying to build a team for the long term. I thought last year the Bills were trying to make a point about a guy like Diggs. We don't need that guy. Allen can be great without a number one. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. I don't think they need to have a number one. I think they would love to have one, and Allen would love to have one.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of thought they were proving a point. And then here comes year two of this, where it's not proving a point. It's they think this is ultimately better. And you just can't find very many people outside of Bills fans and people talking about this team to say it's actually better to not know who's going to beat you in a given game. All these other teams have guys that you know the ball's going to go to them, and the ball does go to them, and they're very effective. It's not bad to have good players. So, whatever. I think they can still be a great team. I fully expect them to be a great team.
Sure.
I also don't want today to just be all about this. I am excited for what they can do on defense. Really excited.
Yeah.
To build the next version of their defense. If Hairston is good, then look out. Their corners are going to be awesome. And I might have questions about their safeties, but their front seven, man, if they can't find a good front seven out of everything that they've added this offseason, then pack it up. Because whether it's Ogunjobi and Hoyt and Bosa and all these picks, that front seven, I'm expecting big things from them. They've got to have answers. They've got dogs up there. It should get nasty for this defense. And that is an exciting idea.
Yeah.
But at the receiver position, I don't think there's any disputing that they do not value it on the level that other teams do.
And he made a good point about how there's going to be, unless there's another ad to come or somebody out of nowhere is able to step up, there's going to be a need for Curtis Samuel to play this year more than he did last year, because last year when he was injured, they were fine, right? Like, yep. In terms of personnel, because they had Mac Hollins. Mac Hollins would come in and play all the time at his position. Coleman would play and Shakir would play, and you know, they got by. They had to trade for Cooper at some point, but they were able to get by. But now, I mean, what is your... In Samuel, that was not new, by the way. Like, he has had nagging injuries throughout his career. Like, that was a part of his story in Carolina and in Washington, too. He never missed, like, I think maybe there was one season he missed a ton of time of. But say that's to happen to him again. Wouldn't be new. Happens almost every year to him. He has nagging injuries throughout the season. Now who's my guy to step up? Because now it looks so thin on paper.
Yep.
Their depth chart. And... Listen, Josh Allen might love the everybody eats mentality and the guys that they have in there, but that's when the guy that was being asked to play more than we thought was a veteran in Mac Collins. How's he going to feel if it's a rookie? How is he going to feel?
They're not going to have any rookies.
An experienced guy. Right. I almost mean like the seventh rounder they just drafted.
Caden Prather.
Yeah. How's he going to feel if it's Shavers? Somebody that has no experience playing in the NFL.
He's going to say he has total faith in that guy and they've worked together for years.
But is he going to throw to him? Because look how long it took him to throw to Shakir. Shakir was on the field for 35% of his snaps in his rookie season. He got 10 passes. I mean, Josh can say all he wants about how much he'll trust a young guy like that, but who's he going to throw the ball to?
Yeah, well, guys got to earn targets.
Right.
To your point about, you know, Palmer and...
Palmer is going to be the answer to this question, I think.
Palmer might be, yeah.
That Palmer is going to have... Palmer is going to have, a big role. Like, in terms of target share and where they're lining him up. Like, I think he kind of has to.
Or it's the year that Kincaid becomes what he's supposed to be. And Kincaid has 90 catches. That's the other part here.
All the eggs are going in your internal basket.
Yep.
It is, like, Palmer is going to come in and supplement and probably be better than what you had from Hollins and Cooper. Combined, even. But that when we talk to Bean, I bet his answer on, like, where that position can grow, it's just going to be, we had three guys last year that, to different extents, disappointed us for different reasons. That everybody eats worked, and Allen won the MVP, but three guys we invested in, Coleman, Kincaid, Samuel, all kind of let us down. And the bet would be that this year, maybe what, two of the three won't.
Right. One thing I just want to say about this whole team build. I don't want to continue to assume that McDermott and Bean are in lockstep in everything they do. It's one thing that Bean explained to everybody right before the draft, that it's not my pick, it's the Buffalo Bills pick. And we have disagreements along the way. And the Bills had, obviously, a number of players come in for top 30 visits. They chose a lot of those players. So here's something to look at. They chose a lot of the guys they brought in for visits or they had extensive background on. And one position that they brought in the most visits, they didn't get any. I almost wonder if they feel, whatever, not like really mad. They'll find other answers. But they went in thinking they were going to get one earlier and get one of the guys they visited, and they just kind of got sniped every time, which, you know, that happens. 803-0550. But McDermott, I think a lot of Bills fans treat it as though McDermott would like them to become, I said Navy last week, but aren't we saying Army is the which is the offense that goes
Navy?
It used to be Navy.
That doesn't throw the ball at all.
It used to be Navy.
Georgia Tech.
Okay, fine.
They definitely don't throw the ball.
I think they both do it though. Yeah, like now, triple option. Army and Navy.
But do it like four times or do it like a normal team.
Well, let me use this one. I think there are Bills fans that treat McDermott as if he's Bill Belichick in the Hurricane game. He'd like to win with three passing attempts, and I don't think that's true at all. I think McDermott knows what's good to have on offense, and he, at the end of the season, talked about it. So my guess is, when they're down there talking about, all right, who do we add post-draft, my guess is McDermott is leading the charge for adding another piece where they didn't get a piece. We'll get your phone calls, 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Bean also did say, by the way, when talking about his defensive line and the picks on the defensive line.
Yeah.
You're allowed to pass on first down. In fact, it's advantageous to do it, right? Something to that effect.
He did. I liked hearing that.
He did talk. Like, your defense needs to be able to rush the passer on first down because teams throw on first down, and it's beneficial to pass on first down, which we'd all say, like, yeah.
That's what's so interesting is their defense forever has been built to as though they – what do they value? They value even that comment. They know how valuable throwing the football is.
Yep.
And that's how they build their defense. They kind of build it, even this draft a little bit, right? Like, the two defensive tackles they drafted, neither are being applauded for, like, this elite run-stopping ability. They are interior defensive linemen, so they're going to be that a little bit. But, I mean, what I'm hearing about TJ Sanders and what, you know, like, the way Joe Marino's talked about Deion Walker is these two might be better pass rushers than they are run-stoppers. And the Bills have small linebackers forever, and they always play nickel and all this investment in the secondary, which I'm not complaining about at all. I think it's the right way to do it. It doesn't perfectly line up right now with the way they're also building their offense, which is, again, like, kind of the curiosity of it. And I know this is a very long time ago, but one thing I thought of when you just talked about McDermott and Bean, again, this has been 4 years since this comment, but Sean McDermott once did call wide receiver the Bills' fastball. When they signed Emmanuel Sanders on March 18th of 2021, McDermott's exact quote was, "You never want to lose your fastball. We wanted to make sure we didn't lose it, the play at the wide receiver position." Again, that is 4 years ago. Yep. But
803-0550.
They had it in them at some point.
Kyle in South Florida. Hey, Kyle.
Well, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Kyle. How are you?
Hey, you guys accomplished something. Your boss has got to be happy. It's like the last day in April or second to last, and you've got packed phone lines in the slowest time of the NFL season. So congratulations there. I thought yesterday was great radio. And maybe, you know, I'm not going to pretend to be fake outraged, because I hear a lot of people calling in. And I think you got a lot of fans who are misrepresenting your take. Which is, you, I know I've heard you guys say this, and I've heard the afternoon guys say this too. You don't want robots. You want people to be like Bean was yesterday in your front office. And we finally get a real moment out of this guy. Albeit, and as you said yesterday, I think you handled it well, Jeremy, that he missed maybe the broader point. But yesterday wasn't a culmination, or I should say yesterday wasn't about what he heard in your conversation with Sal. Yesterday was a culmination of a dude who thinks he's done really, really well, and he has. So for the idiots who keep calling in and says he haven't won anything yet, please stop. You're losing yourself. We were a joke of a franchise. Yes, we haven't won the Super Bowl yet. Noted. We've also rattled off 5 consecutive division titles. We put together a model franchise. So if I'm Bean and I'm feeling a little, you know, peeved because I'm getting questions. And then exactly what happened, I think, is he tuned in late and he's like, oh, more of this. And he lit up. And it's like, I get it. You know, Jeremy, from your point, the fantasy football thing is a little belittling. He took a little shot, right?
Yep.
I think there's that actually says more about your relationship with him and his ability, which you hear throughout that clip of him referencing you by your first name. You guys have a rapport, and you built a relationship to actually have that exchange. And how cool is that? So I thought it was like one of the, you know this, I call you guys a bunch. I love what you guys do. I thought it was one of the best exchanges we've had with the front office, this front office, ever. And I think it'll end up being something that's really cool. I would be shocked if down the road Brandon doesn't come back on, you guys don't have some fun with this. But for the love of God, for the pearl clutching and the dude who just said he said the B word and the person from freaking New Jersey who just said it's unbecoming of a professional. My God, have you ever worked in a passionate profession before? Please, the fake outrage from the fan base and is just exhausting. It was an awesome professional exchange of opinions when we had a general manager who has been very successful, come in a little hot, without context, probably take a position that was strong because he just got done with what he thought was a good draft. And the first thing he got asked by reporters was about what he didn't do, not what he did do. You didn't do that, Jeremy, but he caught that. And I think you realize that. And I just wish the rest of the, even the guys yesterday were offended, like Chauve and the Bulldog were like, you know, talking about my friends that way. Come on, guys. Like, it was not that offensive of a conversation. It was awesome radio. And I just wish you had more time in that exchange to lay out for 45 minutes because I think it would have been riveting stuff. So kudos, you know, to you to how you handled it, Jeremy, but I loved it, and I hope that's okay for me to say.
Absolutely.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah, Kyle, thank you. I appreciate that. I did say, like, in the next segment, he can come on and yell at us every week if he wants. Like, we'll go. We'll do it. We're informed. Yeah. All we want is, you know, more answers, and if you want to tell us why you did a thing, then that's great. To the point about, you know, all the things he's won, I want to make a comparison if I could.
Mm-hmm.
Life with Josh Allen is so interesting, and I didn't know that having a franchise quarterback this good would be this way. But it's almost like everybody over there has to be careful in a way. This is not Josh's fault. This is just the reality. Josh has proven he can win without Diggs. Yeah. Josh will prove he can win without James Cook if they don't sign James Cook, right? And if you're the GM, I'm not saying like this is an active thought I have about they should move on from the GM because I don't. Could Josh win without Sean McDermott? What do we all think?
Yes.
Could Josh win without Brandon Bean?
Sure.
That's like this really sensitive piece. Allen is the key. Bean's the guy that pulled the card and drafted Allen, and he came in like dropping that on the table. Bam, here you go. Remember Josh Allen? I do. And the reason that's the most important card to play is because that's the constant, and it's always going to be the constant. And if Allen... whatever, if you laid out the names, McDermott and Bean are both going likely to leave before Allen, if they leave, ever.
Sure.
Allen is the one that everybody lines up behind. Allen is the one that everybody knows. He, as long as you have him, transition year, all your captains are gone, no Diggs, no Davis, injuries to the offensive line could happen this year. Not going to be an issue. They're going to go win. Oh, Baltimore comes in with Lamar and the MVP. Not going to matter. Josh is going to win. Josh is going to win that game. And it's just, to me, it's a little bit of a be careful, everybody down there, because you want to align yourself with him. But the moment you think it's you are the reason that they're winning, people will remind you, like, actually, it's that guy. It's Josh. You drafted him, but that's the guy that wins.
Yeah.
And for Bean, he has invested picks, Coleman, Kincaid. And right now, those two picks don't look like they're doing enough for Josh Allen. As soon as they look like they're doing enough for Josh Allen, hey, Bean has built this incredible offense, and look at the picks that are contributing in a big way. It's kind of, we've talked about this too, the side effect of everybody eats is that no one gets the production to look like they're worth what you invested.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if we kind of ditched that and the offense ran through Kincaid and Coleman, we'd say like, wow, look at these studs that Bean drafted.
All right.
So there's always this like this, whatever, it's not quite politics, but Allen is the key to everything. He's the reason they have a good culture. He's a reason they have they're a model franchise. Is he a reason they're building a stadium?
Oh, man.
You get that franchise quarterback.
It's definitely an influence.
Your franchise value goes up, what, $1 billion?
Mm-hmm. Right. Why is Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady wanting to buy, and Josie Altidore wanting to buy part of the team? Yeah. I got caught in between, too, yesterday because there was a little bit of, well, right, he's won so much, and a little bit of, you know, puffing your chest out because, right, look how different it is. Look how much better it is. Look how much more they win. 5 straight division titles, all this winning. One part of me completely understands that and empathizes with it. There is another part of me, though, that also thinks, yeah, but you haven't won it. Don't walk around acting like you're not the Patriots, not yet.
Right.
You shouldn't really get to carry yourself like you've won 3 Super Bowls. You know, it isn't that. I mean, when we were at our draft party on Thursday, was this the Thursday party or the Friday draft party? I think it was Thursday. And the draft is on the screen, and the Bills are up on the clock, and ESPN puts a graphic up that says
78
Buffalo
wins.
Bills, 78 wins in the most wins in the history of the NFL that amount of time without making the Super Bowl. That stat got put up on the screen. The most wins ever in that amount of time without making it to a Super Bowl. And what did everybody in the room do?
Groaned.
They groaned and booed it. Yeah. That's not to say that people are unhappy with the last 5-6 years, but It's the job that, you know, you haven't accomplished it yet.
I like to.
You haven't done it yet.
I like to make my comparisons. Aren't they, to a point, Rory McIlroy? You're one of the best.
Rory without the winning at the
Well, there are other majors, but the Masters is the one.
The Masters, yes.
You're Rory. Yeah. Look at all these things I've done. I'm amazing. Yeah, but you got to win that one. And that was one of the things when Rory won the Masters, reading about that, we came in the next day, and I told you, I'm thinking about the Bills. I'm thinking about Josh Allen and the Bills because everyone knows you're good enough, but you haven't done the thing yet. And until you do that thing, the pressure of being good enough to win it is added. This isn't, hey, maybe Caleb Williams will bring the Bears to prominence. This is, everybody agrees this team's good enough to do it. Everybody.
Yeah.
How come they haven't done it? And that's a different kind of level of pressure. Brian in Richmond. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how are you?
Good, Brian.
So the crux of the problem from yesterday, I think, has to do with a couple of things. One is presumed knowledge on both by both parties there, and also the cost of being good. And what I mean by that is when being called in, he kind of laid open on you guys because he just assumed that you are dumb sports jocks who don't look at the look at all the data and do analysis, and you guys do a lot of that, to your credit. And he just presumed you guys didn't know much about what you were talking about, and his comportment was not good with you all. But the presumed knowledge on your end is that, and you said this a couple times, Jeremy, after his call and then when you were on Buffalo Plus last night, that wide receiver takes a back seat with Bean. And you don't know that either. You're not in the draft room when they're sitting there and they're deciding and they've got a wide receiver right next to a defensive tackle. And they go, no, I don't like wide receiver. I'll take defensive tackle. And I think part of the problem also is the cost of being good. One of the reasons we don't have that wide receiver is because we're good. And when you're good, you're not drafting low. It's not like Bean is passed on all these great receivers that, hey, look at all these great receivers we keep passing on. So that's just what I want to call in on, and I'd just like your feedback on that.
Thanks, Brian. No, you're not wrong. Like, I don't know that, which is why I specifically said I'm going to ask him that. I knew on Wednesday the week before we were going to get the GM on Monday, and I'm like, all right, let's see this draft. I'll see how it goes. And like, all right, one of the things I want to ask is, I don't know the answer to this question. I'm going to ask him.
Yep.
And he can give whatever answer he wants, and you know we can pick it apart like we pick apart everything. So, thanks, Brian. You're exactly right. I don't contend that I know what their board looks like. It's actually one of the things I like to point out, that nobody knows what anybody's board looks like, and we don't have to listen to any NFL team for what they tell us after the draft, because you know they could just tell us what they want. And we kind of have to believe it. But that's why I wanted to ask. That was the whole genesis for, I'm going to ask him this question.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
I would probably spend more on receiver than Bean has. I do not think they can't win with what they've done. And I don't know that many people do. I think there might be smarter ways to use their assets.
Right.
But, you know, it's going to maybe get sold as people say the Bills can't do it, which maybe those people are out there. I don't. You know, you and I talk a lot about, can the offense duplicate what it did? My answer to that is, I think they can. I think they can score 30 points a game again. I think they can do it. I think Josh Palmer can come in and be more than Mac Hollins was. I think Keon Coleman can do more than he did last year. I think there's a lot more in there for Kincaid, and whether it's James Cook or what, Curtis Samuel. You could look at every player on the Bills roster from a weapon standpoint and say, will they outperform last year? And every one of them, you would have a very easy case, in part because they didn't put up huge numbers. Nobody really did. So I absolutely think they can win with what they have. I do think that they can that they can match their offensive performance. They can be a top two offense in the league. They were the second ranked offense in the NFL this year. You know, he's saying most points, in part when you include the playoffs.
Totals,
include the playoffs. Now, that's an odd little cherry picked stat, because that's you didn't score as many as the Lions, and the Lions were, they got knocked out in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
That's that. You didn't go, the Lions didn't go as far as you. Mm-hmm. So.
And they had a bye, didn't they?
They did have a bye.
So they played one playoff game?
Yes.
And the Bills played three?
Yes. Okay. The Lions, on points scored, the Lions outscored the Bills in the regular season by 41.
Okay.
So the Bills did not have the number one offense in football. They're number two. And then when you include playoffs.
Which is why you don't even really need to, you don't need to cherry pick it. You know, the point about if you were number two in scoring, that still
it's still great.
It still is in your corner as a point.
But to follow up on that point. So I absolutely think they can do what they just did. Can they be the number one offense? Maybe. Can they be number two or number four? Maybe. I mean, I've said to you, if we go back to when Ken Dorsey got fired, my big pound the table thing was, if you are not top five in offense with Josh Allen, somebody needs to go. Somebody's got to get fired. You can't be the ninth best offense with Josh Allen. It just can't happen. He's too good. And Brady last year took them to two. And that's great. Like that's where you live. Your basement of your offensive expectations with Josh Allen should be fifth. First is great. Third is fine. Fourth is fine. Second is great. Your basement should be fifth. I don't want to sit here and say we scored 200 more points than the Saints. Like, congratulate. They're not in my world. They're not anywhere near the expectations here. They don't play in the same league. So. Yeah, I think they could definitely do it again. The real question comes to, will they have the answers in the biggest moments? And they might. They were really close last year. Any one of these years, they could have won the Super Bowl with a couple different plays here or there. And those plays could definitely come on the defensive side of the ball. I wouldn't dispute that for a second.
Right.
That their defense needs to perform better and can perform better. So, can they win it this year, built the way they are? Definitely. I don't know that I'll pick it or expect it because, you know, heart, emotions, feelings. It's not like, when will I believe again? They had, you know, they had the ball and the lead in Kansas City this year in the second half. And it early in that game, it felt like it was over. And then they were back in it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Mahomes fumble. They're back. They're alive. And then, you know, it's like it comes down to maybe an inch, 2 inches as to why they didn't. So, you know, Bean can go out there and pretend people think he can't do it again when most people probably do.
I mean, I think it's a given they're going to win the division.
Yes, I do too.
Last year, by the way, I thought they were going to win the division when they weren't even favored to. Last year, there was a little more doubt on that.
Three-way.
So, can they be, you said they could be first. I would agree with that. They could be second. They could be third, fourth. Could they be eighth?
In offense?
Yeah. Could they be eighth?
I don't think so. I really don't.
Because I think that's about their floor.
You think eight's their floor?
I think about eight's their floor. Which,
well,
to me, again, it speaks to how valuable and how good Josh Allen is, and you want to include the line in that and the running backs and all that. To me, though, that would be a failure.
Well,
failure on offense, just because of what they have at their disposal, that they should be better. They should be better than 6th, 7th, 8th in the league.
The difference between 5th and 8th last year is...
Is it not that much?
25 points.
Then at that point, that's not that big of a deal.
That's what, what do I want to do? Do I want to say you have to be within 100 points of the top offense?
The ranking part of it is almost kind of a side quest for this conversation. It's more about what do you do in those final two games, the big games you're going to play, when you probably are going to run into either Baltimore or Cincinnati. Maybe Baltimore, maybe I shouldn't give Cincinnati that right now. You might run into Baltimore and Kansas City again. When you run into those two teams, that what is it going to look like in that game? How fearful are they of you coming into that game? Do I need to get Terrell Bernard punching out a ball from Mark Andrews in open field to win that football game? The
Great
Bills
play.
Had a plan that defensively they needed to have because they didn't have the horses to compete with that Ravens offense. Their plan was, we're going to dare him to make mistakes, and they were right. They got a couple. And not just from Jackson, of course, they got a couple from Andrews as well. And they got through that. They won that game with that plan. But it's not the plan I would want to go in with again against that team. I wouldn't want that plan again against the Ravens. I would like my defense to be able to do better, and I also would like my offense to do a little bit more in the second half against that Ravens team.
Well, now that Ravens defense is going to add Malachi Starks to Kyle Hamilton.
Right. Like, the point about the offense, it can make things easier on your defense. You know, like if you are running away from teams and your defense now is getting to play more of a one-dimensional offense, you know, that is, I feel like the complementary football point always goes the other way. It's always more made about how the defense can affect the offense when it does go both ways. And I tried to bring up the Ravens there because I don't always want to belabor just looking at the Chief matchups. But of course, that's the other part of this is 29 points. That's not bad against Kansas City. But even with these additions on defense with Bosa and the new defensive lineman, would you bet on them keeping Kansas City under 30 in a playoff game like that?
It's a tough bet.
It's probably a good number.
It's a tough bet. The other, of course, thing to consider is, what about if it's not Kansas City?
What if they get a year where they don't have to play them? You mean?
Sure. What if it's Baltimore? What if it's Cincinnati? What if all of a sudden, you know, Liam Cohen and the Jaguars are the next hot thing?
Wow. So slow down on the.
I'm just saying.
I know what you mean.
It shouldn't always
right,
be.
Someone will join the party at some point.
I mean, Baltimore was in the party. Baltimore's in the AFC Championship game 2 years ago and lost to the Chiefs by 7.
Right.
In a game where they stopped them again and again and again and again and again and again. So, you know, the Bills could build a defense where they stop the Chiefs again and again. Can they hold them to 17? There's a great question. Can you even picture the Bills holding the Chiefs to 17 in a playoff game? And we've also reached out to someone that covers the Jets to try and get the Jets side of the Elijah Moore story, because he was drafted by the Jets and then goes to the Browns and now is a Bill. 1 year, up to $5 million to join the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
And they get a wide receiver that makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Fit skill set and...
Yeah. Fits some needs. The timeline of all this was that he came in before the draft. They met with him before the draft. They told him, hang on, let's see how the draft goes.
Uh-huh.
For obvious reasons, because they were intending on likely taking a receiver. That didn't happen because it never worked out that way. They circle back in office terminology. And here's Elijah Moore for 1 year, $5 million. We got to get Sal back to explain how, because we were talking about that unrestricted or un-free agent, whatever.
UFA tender or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. There's a UFA tender we all kind of learned about and how that was going to affect the timing. But the Bills wasted no time and paid him, and his incentive goes up to $5 million. So there you have it.
We'll get more from that on Sal. My understanding of it is, though, is it only affects Cleveland. That they get into the compensatory formula now.
That's right.
Because of this.
The way that it affected the Bills is he was basically going to need to make a minimum salary.
Right, so they had to bid against a number.
Yes.
$3.4 million.
And they likely went above that, at least in some incentives.
Yeah.
Maybe the guaranteed number is the 3.4, and the incentive is the 1.5 on top of that. And depending on what the incentive is, it may be pretty darn close to 1 year, $5 million.
Right. And really, Moore probably didn't want to go back to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Right? Like, okay, $3.4 million would have been guaranteed. That's nice, but you're trying to further your career. He's 25 years old. He's played on two teams that have had god-awful quarterbacks all the way through. The Jets with Zach Wilson, and then the Browns with Watson and Dorian Thompson-Robinson and the other seven quarterbacks they've played in the last 2 years. So, and that's not solved. Right, that's a four-way quarterback competition that he would be going back to had he said, oh yeah, I'll stay in Cleveland for the 3.4. And didn't they kind of just take his spot away? Like, is there even... It's not to say the Bills have a spot for him. It might be the same.
I think they have a spot for him.
They have at least a spot in the top five. Cleveland, though, the spot that he had last year where he was second on the team in targets at wide receiver, he was the number two guy. I mean, now it's Jerry Jeudy, Cedric Tillman, Deontay Johnson. So it's not even like you just have this wide open opportunity in Cleveland where you're the number two. You're not the number two anymore. So at that point, if it's, well, I'm a depth receiver here versus I'm a depth receiver there, the money's almost the same. Josh Allen here, winning here. Shedeur Sanders drama and Dylan Gabriel over here. Okay, yeah, I'll go to Buffalo.
You know, it's one thing we should probably consider about these receivers. There's, I want to play with Josh Allen. Sure, that makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
Bills are a winning organization, but without trying to take a shot at the Bills receiver core. If you are a guy that thinks you've got some ability, you probably look at this group and say, I can definitely get in there. I can definitely get on the field.
Sure.
Mac Hollins did it last year. Mac Hollins, so I've got some Bills of last year, the receivers they had last year. So Hollins signs with the Bills for 1 year, 2.6. That was it.
Yep.
2.6 for Hollins, which is about, what, half of what Elijah Moore has signed for. 1 year, 2.6. And Hollins lived in that neighborhood for a while. His previous year, his previous contracts were 2.5, 2.6, and then now in New England, his base salary is like 4.2. So Hollins got a nice little raise, and the Bills were not willing to pay him that 4.2. And if I'm being honest, Elijah Moore is a better idea than Mac Hollins.
Yes.
I think he's a better receiver than Mac Hollins. And I think Elijah Moore has the potential to be better than Amari Cooper was last year. So does Josh Palmer. The Bills have, for, you know, $15 million in the form of Palmer and Moore, probably upgraded a little bit. So whatever. There's a lot to get into with regard to all of it. It's been a week. I mean, we've had a week, as evidenced by the existence and the coining of the Jerry and Joe show, courtesy of, you know, the shouty shows. But the Bills have made a nice move here. A move that we talked about before the draft. He's probably the best of the UFA ideas out there, better than Keenan Allen. Better idea than
bringing Cooper back.
Yeah, I think he's I thought he was the best of the free agent ideas on buy low and see what this can become. 1 year, up to $5 million. He's young. He could parlay it into something. It could also be a Mac Hollins situation where he plays really well and they decide not to sign him and we're kind of back in the same boat. So,
right.
This reminds me of a Beasley Brown kind of signing. It reminds me of a Mac Hollins signing. And to the larger point on what they do at this position, if they want to do it this way where, hey, let's keep finding guys on other teams that we think are better than their production. And let's keep taking hits at that. They could absolutely shine a guy up. That is kind of what they did on Diggs' side, but that was obviously a much higher level. That was, this guy's really good, really good. We think with us he can become great. And he did. He elevated to another level. So you see an awful lot of receivers, Joe, go from wherever they were to a level above with the Bills.
Almost every guy they've brought in, that was Brown.
Yep.
That was Beasley.
Hollins, Diggs.
Hollins.
Davis. Yep. Davis is the opposite. Amazing here. Not good anywhere else, really. Not worth much anywhere else.
Right. Cooper's at the end, and it's like half a season, so like it's tough to kind of quantify that one. But I mean, that's enough right there. Like those are their big receiver moves for the most part over the last 5 years. So
yeah, and I would imagine if you throw Khalil Shakir somewhere else, he might be a nice player. I don't know if he'd have the same kind of production he has here. Here they build him, they build the offense for him in some cases where he gets manufactured touches and he's really productive. So Moore makes a ton of sense. They have 3 to 4. I want to say you hear me talk all the time about reception perception and Matt Harmon, who. What he does is he pulls receivers out of their system, out of their quarterback, out of their production, and says, here's how good they are. Does he win on this route? Does he win on that route? Does he win against man? Does he win against press? And the one thing that I think might be true of both Moore, all three, Samuel, Moore, and Palmer, is I think they might all be modest reception perception darlings. Yeah. Where, ooh, I kind of like this guy. It's never really popped for him, but I've liked him for a while. That was Harmon on Curtis Samuel, and that's Harmon on Elijah Moore, too. Elijah Moore, there's a lot to like, and I like that it's 1 year five. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he comes in and pushes someone down the depth chart. It's worth pointing out last year that Mac Hollins came in, and while the Bills can act like that was the plan, he pushed guys down the depth chart. Mm. Mac Hollins beat out Curtis Samuel, and he beat out Keon Coleman for snaps. And he won't do that this year, but it might be Elijah Moore that beats out other players for snaps. So I think he's firmly in the mix for wide receiver 3.
Yes.
If Shakir
him and Samuel are battling at the very least.
I saw Mike Clay suggest, could Samuel be the odd man out? Which I don't know that they have the depth to do that.
I also don't think I think he costs way more
he does.
To get rid of him. So I don't think that's happening.
I don't think that's happening either. But this is probably going to be some reasonable guaranteed money at signing. By comparison, when the Bills signed Mac Hollins, it was 1.1 guaranteed.
Yeah.
And he played his way into a heck of a role. When they signed MVS, it was 2.2 guaranteed at signing.
What was that worth up to? Like 4?
MVS?
You have that there. I think it was worth up to 4 something. But either way, it was less. Whatever it was, it was less.
I think the whole thing was 1 year for 2.25. I don't see anything. Okay. I don't see anything about what it was up to.
Okay. All right.
But I might need a Spot Track subscription a little better to find that out.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So I like the move. I think it is also the type of skill set they didn't really have.
He's fast.
He's fast. He runs down the field. He can play in the slot. I think last year it was like 40% in the slot, 60% outside, but for most of his career it's been more on the outside. So that separation and route tree that he has, I don't know that they have another type like that. I mean, Coleman is not that type, and neither is Shakir, or I think Samuel is maybe the closest thing that resembles that, which is why maybe they're competing for a role or for snaps. I also feel like they can make that rotation entirely work altogether, where they're all getting 30% of the snaps. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how they played it at the end of last year. When Cooper got back healthy, you had and Samuel was healthy too, and he made some plays, right? The touchdown against Denver, and he made a play in the Chiefs game in the regular season. When he got healthy, he was a part of the rotation, at least in terms of the snap count. So I would expect that these are probably going to be your 5 receivers, and they're all going to play. And that doesn't mean Moore is going to – he might not put up the numbers he did last year in Cleveland. He might also be twice as efficient. Right, he's not going to get 102 targets. Is there even that upside? Maybe there's that upside, but it's very slim that he would get 102 targets in this offense like he did in Cleveland last year.
If he does, how many did Mac Hollins get?
Not 100.
Not 100, but 60?
What do you think the number was? I think he got
65.
He had 50.
50 targets.
He caught 31 passes on 50 targets. Okay. And maybe that's something around what Moore could get, or maybe a little bit more. But
I would put on the bet board he gets more than 50.
More than 50 targets?
Yep. I think he's going to fit in really well. And the Bills, you know, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Brandon Bean can say, why are we talking about wide receiver? Because everybody sees you don't have enough there. That's why. And then you add somebody there, which makes total sense. So where can Moore slot in? Who is definitely better than him? Josh Palmer's had a slightly better career and looks like a nice player.
And they would certainly appear to believe, and the league would, that Palmer is better because he got a much bigger contract.
He got twice as much.
Yeah.
Twice as much. So Palmer, but he plays on the outside primarily. And with Moore, I just think that Moore is a lot like Curtis Samuel, except a little more outside chops than Curtis Samuel. But the speed element...
That's right.
I mean, Moore is probably going to fit in great for the screen game that they run, so it won't just be Shakir. I kind of want to watch some of his film and say, how would he have done on the 3rd and 10 on the final drive of the AFC Championship game against the Chiefs? I know that's digging into one play.
Right.
But if they had somebody else that wasn't Amari Cooper, who I don't think had a great skill set for that...
Yeah, and by the way, on the volume versus efficiency point, like if he doesn't get 100 targets and he gets 67, he might catch as many balls as he did last year, or maybe he catches, you know, a much higher percentage. Last year, he caught 61 passes on 102 targets. Only 65 of his targets were catchable. 65 were catchable because of his quarterback play. That's 185 receivers in the league last year. He had the 15th lowest rate of catchable targets.
This is kind of how it works. All right, so he had 100 targets last year for Cleveland.
Yeah.
And that's on how many snaps? Can you look that up?
Yes. He last year played 76% of the snaps.
Okay, 76% of the offensive snaps. That's a good number. I mean, I don't think too many Bills receivers are hitting 76%.
I would agree with that.
So he's on the field a bunch. Here's what's going to happen here. Those passes are going to be catchable. He's going to prove to produce, and then that's going to earn targets. Like, that's how this will always work. It'll always work that if it's working, they'll go to you. You will earn targets. How did Mac Hollins get more than we thought? He produced pretty early in the season. Look at this guy. Let's keep throwing to Mac. And Shakir, of course, that's the case. Kincaid, when it's working, you season one, he got a lot of targets, got a lot of catches. Season two, there's injuries. It's not working the same. So Why didn't they go back to Keon Coleman in the second half of the season? First half, it starts to work. He gets hurt, and then it's gone. And he does not get the same number of targets. He certainly doesn't get the same number of catches. He's not on the field that much in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
I just think this is a really nice ad and something that the Bills, I mean, you don't exactly want to celebrate or spike the football over a player that signed after the draft, but you might,
right.
You might not find many more impact players that are signed that make a bigger impact than this one will, I think.
And this is a part of the whole conversation about even the minutes before Bean came on the air on Monday, we did talk about when they signed guys like this last year. And that they still could do it because I think everybody believed there needed to be one more receiver, a veteran especially, that has played in the league in this room because you have a lot of ifs at that position and some of them are injury, some of those are development. And if Curtis Samuel, you know, twists his ankle in training camp, then I'm at Tyrell Shavers is playing meaningful snaps for me. And do I like Tyrell Shavers, but am I really comfortable with that being the plan going into a year, as he is the immediate backup plan. And when they've often had guys, like last year, when that happens, guys that have played in the league, veterans that are ready to step in. And they didn't even have that option. And now they have it. And the Bills just admitted to they thought they needed another guy in the room, and that they, even Bean also said this in his press conference after the draft, that they thought they were going to draft a receiver higher than they did.
Yes.
And to me, this is proof of that. That there was room for another guy. Bean said they thought they would draft a guy before round 7. They said they checked in with Moore before the draft. It all adds up to there needed to be another body in this wide receiver room. Someone of consequence in this room that isn't, you know, a guy that's a kick returner and maybe we'll see if he could play on offense.
Can I give you a couple of comps from Matt Harmon at Reception Perception? Because
sure.
There's some interesting stuff in here. When I say he's a darling of this website, Diggs was a darling of this website. And personal story, I draft all of my fantasy football receivers based on what Matt Harmon says, and mm-hmm. I have stud receivers everywhere. It's a great site to pull out what receivers do. So he says, Elijah Moore was one of Reception Perception's biggest flag plant players coming into his second NFL season. He didn't do a ton, but he looked the part. He looked great. Everything seemed to be lining up for a breakthrough campaign for the gifted young receiver, and yet he ended up at odds with his coaching staff and ended up in a dramatically reduced role.
Right.
If that sounds familiar, it should. There's some distinct differences, but it's not too dissimilar to what took place with Brandon Ayuk 1 year prior.
Yeah.
He's talking about this guy looks good. He's playing with a bum. He's with an offense that doesn't know what it's doing. Sometimes receivers get treated as divas. Other times, you're the only one out here qualified because you're playing with Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
Or you're playing with who would have been the offensive coordinator at that time? Adam Gase. I go back and check some Jets offensive coordinators.
I don't even remember.
Hey,
Mike White might have been playing quarterback at times.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Like, listen, I'm good and my career's being wasted. He goes to Cleveland. He's supposed to be paired with Deshaun Watson, of course. Deshaun Watson, that blows up. So if you're Elijah Moore, you have been in the league for a little while, searching for a home where you can finally show what you can do. And
yeah.
If this is one of the Bills' little models here to shine up receivers like this, as we just laid out with Beasley and Brown, and I think it's a good idea. That might be a reasonable model.
Shouldn't it also speak to what they think of him as the player and as the potential upside of the player when this isn't Mac Collins, you know, he's going to come in and be a leader and be a voice in that locker room. Like, that's what Hollins was described in those ways very early on after he signed with the Bills. That, hey, his value is not just going to be this on the field. It's not just going to even be a wide receiver. It's going to be special teams. It's going to be what he does in the locker room. It's going to be leading Keon Coleman and young guys. Whereas Elijah Moore got into that beef with the Jets that saw him traded out of town because he got mad about playing time and how bad the quarterback play was and the whole thing that was happening in New York. He got into it there. He got suspended last year in Cleveland for disciplinary reasons. We talked with John in the Peterlin earlier in the week, and he did tell us that like he never heard there was ever a problem with him in the locker room. But he did get suspended for disciplinary reasons. The Bills just picked up a receiver that, you know, disciplinary suspension, got into it with the Jets even before that, and they still signed him. Wouldn't that kind of tell you they think the player is potentially really good?
Is it okay to like him even more now?
A little bit. I think that's fine.
Maybe he's got the makeup to want to be great and has been stuck in places where he can't be great.
And their willingness to sign a guy like that, to me, I think it speaks more to they think that the type of player that he's going to be on the field is exactly what they need. And I don't even know how you could debate against that. It's been most of our receiver talk during the offseason is this is the type of receiver they needed. They needed a guy that could separate and win down the field. Somebody that can even run the routes. And now, again, like you're making an assumption he makes the team, and at the moment
I definitely would.
That he will be the guy that's running those routes and pushing safeties back.
So, again, I want to read you more from reception perception. This is going back in time, but benchmarks. There are indicators here. This is the story of a wide receiver who got off on the wrong foot and might still have a lot left. This, to me, you want to make this a quarterback conversation? This is Sam Darnold. This is, wow, forget it, his career's over, he's toast. Or Geno Smith. By the way, these are all Jet stories.
These are all Jet stories. Right. Not only bet on a guy that really couldn't do it somewhere else, bet on a guy that was in two dysfunctional organizations like Cleveland and New York.
Right. So,
honestly,
Matt Harmon, more cleared not one, but two key benchmarks we look for when trying to project breakout receivers. 75% success rate against man, one of the best indicators of a high-level outside receiver, and 80% success rate against zone. We want to see that to see receivers pass if they're going to be great slot or outside players. He had both of those. Mm-hmm. Matt Harmon looked at this dude as a rookie, broke down the film, and said inside and outside, he wins. There are good indicators here. He said during his second season, the most frustrating part of his second season is, what? He was still open all the time.
Yeah.
The guy gets open. He gets open. He has been doing his part.
Yeah.
Moore's brilliance is shown in the intermediate areas where Garrett Wilson is dominant on layup routes. Moore's refinement shines through on curls, comebacks, outs, digs. Such a pro when it comes to the little factors in playing the position and creating separation from a variety of coverages.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I don't watch these antique roadshow shows, but hey, what do you think of this thing? Like, this actually might be amazing. You know,
yeah.
There are people that have liked this player, and the NFL gives you 10 minutes to prove you can do it, and especially at that position where every single year there are 15 new sexy ideas. And there's a point here about, you know, receiver and the value of drafting them. Receiver gets expensive and drafting them is cheap. So Elijah Moore kind of has to limp back to the league and say, all right, what can I get? Where can I go? How can I prove it?
Right. Especially when you're still young. You're 25 years old.
Which,
that is, to me, the biggest difference, I think, between... Maybe there are two. You just kind of spoke to the other one. Between this May signing... Well, I guess it was April when they signed him. April 30th. But post-draft receiver signing this year versus the post-draft receiver signings last year. Last year, you had one guy who was 30 in Marquez Valdes-Scantling. One trick pony, downfield routes. You knew exactly what he was. He had played in the league long enough. You knew what he was. And then the other guy was Chase Claypool. Now, he was a little bit younger, but all the things we're talking about route trees and beating man coverage one-on-one and separation ability and speed down the field, Claypool didn't have any of that.
Yeah. And the level of
Claypool was just you're betting on a physical freak figuring out how to play the position in a way that he hasn't really already. Moore is more, to me, he knows how to play the position. It just hasn't really lined up yet. And to me, a bet on a guy like that is much more likely to work than the other two bets, like MVS or Claypool.
You know what they guaranteed Claypool at signing? $25,000.
Probably as low as you possibly
can. Like that's just the minimal investment. Sometimes
you have $25,000 to practice for the Bills like two times.
We did this with Trey White. When the numbers come in, what does it say?
Yeah.
And for Trey White it was he's on the team.
for Elijah. And, we'll see Elijah Moore, I would guarantee.
I was going to say. Like,
it's going to be a nice number of guaranteed money. He's yeah. He's on the team.
It would be surprising if it was like $1 million with $4 million in incentives. It's probably going to come around like three.
Oh, I think it'll
two and a half, three.
I think it'll be 3.5 to 4.
All right. Yeah.
We'll see. 803-0550. When we get back, we'll get some calls in. John, stick with us. Right to your call on the other side. We're late for a break. What do you think, Bills fans? It's been a week. What's your reaction to this? Let's talk about it. We've talked about it quite a bit, but I think it's a nice move. It's a nice move. Josh Allen gets another weapon. You want to start with Devin Levi, though?
Sure. Yeah.
The Amerks are through. They swept the crunch.
Yep.
Levi had back-to-back shutouts.
Yep.
And we talked about Levi with Paul earlier this week. He's, can I say, amazing?
Yes, you can.
In the AHL, he is amazing.
Yes.
And there was an article this week, Lance, from the Buffalo News, Lance Lysowski, writing that Lukin and Levi, the most likely pairing for the Sabres going forward. And here he is, just dominating the AHL again. And I want to put all my eggs in his basket, that this profile reads like a guy that, in the right amount of time, should be here and should be good. He's dominant on the AHL level. Is that too far?
No. I don't think so. I think you could say he's been dominant on every level so far that is
sure,
in the NHL.
Sure. And now that he's at the AHL, whether it's amazing or dominant or above par, what am I supposed to do with it? He's supposed to be here. He should be here.
Well, he will be here.
Yeah,
he should be here next year.
Yes.
That's absolutely true. Like, if I could take away the how many NHL games has he played actually at this point? Is it 30? Is it less than that? Four? I don't even know.
It's not that many. I mean, it was 7 his first season, and how many last year was it?
2? This past year, I thought it was a few more than that.
Okay, and then he got hurt the year before, and they played him through it.
He's played 39 games in his
39.
Career. 9 this year, 23 the year before, and 7 the year before
23.
That. Yeah, I mean, they began the year.
That's right.
Did he play the first 5?
Yeah.
He was the starter.
They leaned hard, yeah.
And they got hurt. So, you know, if I could take away all those NHL games that he's already played so far, and I just evaluate the steps of development for a young goalie that was a top prospect, I have him dominating every step of the way, which would imply to you that eventually he's going to get to that in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
That's not every time is that how it happens. I feel like Jack Campbell is a name in my head right now that was a...
Owen's that a good name?
Jack Campbell's like a great prospect before the NHL, huge expectations, and he became a backup, basically.
Yeah, right. He had a good sort of rocket up the charts as he was a younger guy, and then kind of, I think, played a style that was a little more conducive to inconsistent results.
Okay.
Where Levi is a little more technical and play reading, and that should translate a little better. Campbell, to me, always felt a little more athletic and probably a little more inconsistent.
Okay, I have another name for you here that's taken this track. Is Dustin Wolf the right name?
That is
Calgary.
100% the guy that I think about with Levi every single time
I
think about
Levi. Okay, because Wolf is a 7th-round pick.
Exactly, and small.
And it took him a couple of years to bake in the oven, and then he's good.
Exactly, and he dominated in the WHL when he was down there, and then he dominated the AHL when he was there, and then they brought him up to the big leagues, and here he is.
And he's awesome. He had 18 games 2 years before this year, 18 games, and you know he had a save percentage in the biggest season he had under .900. So, again, there's a lot more than
before getting going this year.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot more than just save percentage. He shows up this year, and he's .910, and like, okay. Yeah. He's a Calder Trophy candidate, right?
He dragged that Calgary team around because they were not, like, I mean, look at that roster. It's not
53 very good. Games. Like, what if the Sabres got 9-10 goaltending for 53 games this year on a team that scored the way that they scored?
I'd almost want to say I'd expect them to make the playoffs.
I would.
Yeah, at least
the way
be
they scored
into the race until the last day of the season or 2 days of the season. But they probably,
yeah. If I can get the freaking power play to do anything,
right.
But other than that, yeah, I would expect them to make it. That to me is the interesting part of this. He is so good right now, back to back shutouts, one of the top goalies in the AHL, and all the hype. That if we're right that he is, and they're right, that he's going to be like a great number one goalie. Not even just like a starter in the league, but he's going to eventually turn into like one of the 10 best goalies in hockey. That what that means to them. What that means to them year to year. Because part of them missing the playoffs all of these years is their inconsistency, right? And some of that's, a lot of that's goalie, where one year you have good goaltending like they had last season, and then the next year, okay, I got to figure out the other stuff and the goaltending will hold up, right? No, didn't hold up. And that's been true of almost every single goaltender. Actually, really has been true of every single goaltender except for Ullmark, and he got hurt all the time, since Ryan Miller's been their goalie. And if you could tell me that Levi's going to become top 10 goalie and I've got him under contract, then year to year to year, I have this baseline that I'm starting with every single season.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna make the playoffs. I might not make it every year with that. It was Miller, wasn't it? Miller was every year you had a foundation that you were gonna have at least this good of goaltending. And sure, there'd be years where you'd miss the playoffs.
Yep.
Because just the rest of it wasn't good enough. But
I feel like he had one bad year too, but maybe
Miller?
Maybe not even that bad. It's probably the floor, like you said.
Right, but your floor, your minimum is, if I have a guy like that, then I'm at least going to make the playoffs. Like, what was it with Miller after Breer and Drury left? Two out of four? Two out of five?
Yeah.
I'm going to make it a couple times.
And the two in between, they were not completely embarrassing. Like, they were somewhat competitive.
Yeah. Right, so that feels like your floor if Levi gets going. Like, I think the meaning of him developing into what the hype kind of shows is more important than any other player in their organization right now.
Well,
I completely agree. Yeah. I think especially in the league the way it is now with the goaltending, it all fluctuates so much. There's not a lot of guys that are going to be consistently 9-10 goalies like we talk about here. And if you can find that gem and you can get it locked in, and that's a consistent part of your team build, that gives you a leg up on, I don't know, 75% of the league in terms of having the stability and increase to then build out and know, all right, we know we can absolutely get 9 out of 10 shots saved a game. That frees up everybody else on the roster to do what they need to do, whether it's the offensive defenseman for the Sabres. I mean, you know, you've got a lot of guys that want to do more on the offensive side of the puck, and I think some of that is stifled by we don't know what we've got in the blue paint right
and
now.
And that's one thing where the Sabres have spent a lot of this offseason saying, like, well, we didn't play too well in front of him. They had the lowest high-danger save percentage in the NHL?
Yeah.
You could say you didn't do a good enough job in front of him. You could also say whenever it broke down, it went in the net.
Right.
Like, worst in the NHL.
Exactly. And you need those numbers, those high-danger save numbers for guys. It's not always a fair indicator of what's going on because you've got situations and they develop differently, and not all high danger chances are created equal. I'll tell you that. Like, some chances in that bubble, even though they're supposedly high danger, are not created the same as the others.
Yep.
And so there were definitely times this season with the Sabres where they were putting a lot on UPL and Reimer, but there were also times where you, as a player, as a skater, look back and go, we need a save here, and they almost never got that. Mm-hmm. And you need that in crucial points of the season. It's more about those key points. You zoom in on one game, Colorado, right? The 4-0 blow. You need a goalie to make one of those stops and just stop the bleeding. And that, think about how much one save there could have changed the course of the rest of that season. Like, I don't want to get too micro on that.
Right, right.
But
yeah.
That's the reality of the position is the butterfly effect from you outwards is much greater than any other player has from their own position. You can dictate far more what happens in those games and where things go based on confidence and, you know, obviously scores of games. It changes everything.
Isn't he much more likely to be one of their two goalies next year than Lukanen is?
No.
Like, there's trade stuff about Lukanen.
Yeah,
Friedman had that.
Really? That they're gonna. Friedman said
that they were going to be, that he was available, and they were looking for maybe a swap. Like to me, what would, if Kevin Adams is going to remain as the general manager, and at this point, I believe he is. I mean, there's no announcement on that, but there's no announcement that he isn't.
Right.
So
I'm not sure there'll be an announcement of anything.
Right. So we're just going to keep going as though he's the general manager. What are the last two big trades he's made? And what are the types of trades he's been talking about now for 20 months?
He's been making swaps and hockey trades.
Yes.
It's Byram for Mittelstadt.
Yeah.
It's McLeod for Savoy. It's Cousins for Josh Norris.
Yeah. He's making trades out of his core. For the same position.
Right.
Well, not in the middle set Byram trade swap, but if I've got Friedman talking about Lukanen, and, I mean, even Adams, you know, he gave you the token question answer when he was asked about it, the presser, like, he wasn't as, you know, when he got asked about Lukanen, he did, in the goaltending, he did say he would look to make the team better. You know, he opened that door at least a creak. He didn't just say, no, Lukanen and Levi are goalies next year. And he could have, but he didn't. And Friedman's talked about it, so would that be his big idea for the summer? He's got to have one, right? He's going to be under pressure, and this team's got to make the playoffs. You've already made your center swap. You're not trading Dahlin or Thompson, so pick a guy from your core and go make another hockey trade, and to me, the guy you would do that with is absolutely Lukanen. And I've already got a little bit, a teensy bit of smoke that already kind of implies that that is maybe where he's headed.
He has had a good season in the NHL, so the Sabres might be afraid of getting rid of that because, again, like they have to shop in bargain bins or trades, right? You want you're a trade for somebody else's goalie that has had a rough time that is also $5 million. Like, how's that going to work? Are they going to eat salary in this potential Lukanen trade? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, he's on the roster, and the idea of somebody taking his salary and term on his contract to me sounds unlikely, but if Friedman says it's there, then I've got reason to trust that.
Yeah, I think it's tough. Like, I think it's warranted to think we want to move off of that and try something new there. But I think it's like systematically in the league, very a tough trade to make. And like you're not going to find a lot of teams that are looking to make that bet on a guy. Like the teams that come to mind for me are like Vancouver.
Yeah.
Like Demko's always hurt. Do they want to take a shot on a guy? They're kind of in a middle ground. Like
that's the Norris trade, isn't it?
Right.
That is, you've got a young guy who's looked good 1 year and has promise, and I'm going to swap him for another guy who's definitely better, but I've got a big injury concern to look at.
Exactly. And I don't know that the Sabres want to take two of those risks going into this year. Seems scary to me.
How many times am I going to forget Josh Norris exists?
You're going to their highest paid forward,
yes,
and their number one center on paper going into next year.
I'm
going
to forget about him 100 times. They traded Cousins. Who'd they get?
Right. Jacob Bernard Docker?
Right. Norris, who never played, which is unfortunate because that could have been a nice little boost for the Sabres, like pushing next year about what they have and why people should believe in them.
For context on the Friedman thing, by the way, it wasn't like the strongest, you know, quote ever. He said, there are teams, this was on April 19th, there are teams who believe that Lukanen could be available. Whispers around the league that teams that are looking for goaltenders, that he may be the guy who could be out there.
All right. Well, good luck to Kevin Adams on that one. We'll see. Again, if he's the one making the decisions. Our phone number is 803-0550. We expect that to be the case. 1-888-550-2550, the Amherst Advance. And Devin Levi, again, is spectacular for them. Another shutout. They swept Syracuse. They go on to the next round. In the NHL playoffs, we don't really have any sort of keep an eye on this guy because he's going to win the cup and embarrass the Sabres, right? Like, Cousins just got eliminated last night.
Yep.
No Cousins. You've got Toronto, Florida, which means half of Florida's roster again. Maybe not half. But
a lot of those guys are gone now,
right?
Aren't
that's
they?
That's right. It's
Montour's
Reinhardt.
Gone.
It's Reinhardt.
Poso's gone. And Reinhardt. And then Rodriguez is still there.
Right. Reinhardt, basically.
But Reinhardt,
Washington,
yeah.
Carolina, nothing really there. You've got Eichel again. Eichel v. Skinner, if you want that.
Yeah. Although Skinner, wasn't playing every game.
He's not a big contributor for Edmonton.
No. He got his streak broken. He made the playoffs. He played a playoff game.
Now he's out of the conference semifinals.
I think he played game one and that was it.
There you go.
So he only played game one.
Wait, is this like...
He had an assist, by the way.
Was this a ceremonial let him play game one and now he's out for the rest of the playoffs?
Ooh, that would be tough.
Was there a ceremonial Jeff Skinner's never made the playoffs and they gave him the opening face-off and then just like put him on the bench?
Oh, man.
How many...
Yeah, I think they might have.
Really? That might be it.
He had a point. Yeah. He had an assist in the game. Listen, if that's the only playoff game he ever plays,
that's
one playoff game, 1 point. I mean, he might want to retire.
I mean, he had a point and they took him out.
He's like, I'm going to go out on top here.
I think he was a minus three, I saw. Or yeah, maybe it was
minus, not, minus
was
two.
Minus two, okay.
I think he was on the ice for all three goals,
I
but he didn't
that,
get a minus
that
two.
That might be right. I mean, how much of that is on him and Stuskin? Yeah.
Not that this guy is the same thing, but I think he also lost his spot to Evander Kane, who returned after not playing all season from injury.
Gotcha.
That might be part of the reason why, and he's probably more built for playoff-style hockey. It would be Eichel, though, wouldn't it? Eichel winning a second time?
Sure.
Is the only, you know, because everything he would win, you know, the embarrassment of you traded away your best player and he won without you. If it's now, well, he's won two without you.
Sure.
And then if he's won three without you, like it would depend how many he wins. But
isn't the embarrassment, isn't that whole thing over, though?
I think so for the most part.
It's over.
I'm saying it could get fired up again if he wins again.
I guess.
Or if he goes to the finals.
I have almost never felt that. Like, the year and the comments he made when he came back, I was hot. But after that, like, you're in Vegas. Go be Jack Eichel in Vegas.
All it would be is just more evidence that you know, the plan out of the gates with him was, you got to have a center that good to be able to win the Stanley Cup, and more evidence that, oh yeah, he was always good enough to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
You got to have a great team, but he was, you know, he was good enough to be the best player on a cup-winning team.
The only thing that could be different is we're watching the handshake line here. He scored last night on a breakaway, Eichel did. A big goal on the road in Minnesota. The only thing that could be different is if they win another one and he wins the Conn Smythe this time. Which,
because Marchessault won it last time.
Yeah, I mean, Eichel had a good claim to it, but Marchessault did win it.
Yeah.
And then you'd have, you know, O'Reilly and Eichel both winning it. But again, like, I do think you've still got your fans that are going to want to go and boo him when they come to the building. And that's fine. That makes total sense. But the idea that it's salt in the wounds, like, you're talking about salt in the wounds of the nerve endings are already dead. It's just like, whatever. Who cares? I've got my own front porch to clean up over here. So I'm going to mix a lot of metaphors here, but I never worried about it. It never hurt me, the idea that he was going to win there. I fully expected him to go there and be successful. You know, you wanted the Sabres to come out of it even, looking good, going in the right direction, and I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But they're on to the next round, and Edmonton-Vegas is a heck of a series.
Yeah.
I guess my only thing would be, who coached Team USA, by the way, in the Four Nations again? Help me remember.
I know Bill Guerin was the GM.
Is, Cooper and Sullivan?
Cooper and Sullivan, okay.
That might be right.
Because the U.S. lost when they stopped matching Eichel against McDavid in that game.
Sullivan was the coach,
yeah. Because Eichel was against him for a good chunk of it, and then Matthews started to draw, because Matthews, I mean, he's great too. And, you know, they lost that tournament.
The staff was Mike Sullivan, John Tortorella, John Hines, and David Quinn.
All right.
I don't know where I grabbed John Cooper from. That's Canada.
Canada was the... Yep. Yeah.
803-0550. Carl in Minnesota. We got a call on Devin Levi. Let's go for it. Hey, Carl.
Hey, good morning, guys. I just wanted to weigh in on what I feel is like the mishandling of Devin Levi so far at the NHL level. At least he came in at the end of the season that he left college and played great because he was in game shape. He had played a whole season. The next year, Granato started the year with him. I think he played four games in 6 days, and they got him injured. And Granato said after the last game, he said he wanted him to feel the grind. What grind is there at the beginning of the year? I don't get that. Hmm. And this year, I thought he was set up to fail with just the spot starts. So he's without criticism for his NHL record. And I think he's been a lot better.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Carl. Isn't Levi... One of the things that whenever we talk to Paul about what the Sabres have done the last couple of years, they put guys in roles they're not ready for, and they don't have enough of a veteran presence, and that started to turn a little bit here with your Zuckers and Greenways and the guys of that caliber, and that what Levi needed was just a little bit of time. They put him in that one season when they're trying to make the playoffs because it was working. Like, ride him into the ground. It's the end of the season. He's in form. Let's go. And then after that, it was trying to recapture that lightning in a bottle, and then that never came back, and they were pushing it too hard.
Yeah, I think they were going off of what they saw at the end of his first year, where he came in and was, you know, the push that they needed to try and make a run. And I don't think I agree with the game shape point. Like, that Levi, knowing what I know about him, I know a couple of people that speak very highly of him. He works way too hard to ever be out of shape, not be able to play four games in 6 days. I think any you know, really solid goaltending prospect would want that and welcome that. But I think that they were, yeah, exactly, trying to catch that lightning in the bottle because they saw it the year before. And you can't really try and do that with him because he was too young. He had come off a great season at Northeastern. And you've got all that momentum. That can make up for a lot of sort of inefficiencies or shortcomings of your preparation in the NHL. If you're sort of ramped up at that level, you can make up for the lack of experience, but that doesn't last through a whole summer into the next season. Like, you can come in and feel great, feel ready, but you need to let him cook in the AHL like they did this year.
Yeah. Listen, a lot of that was it is kind of amazing looking back that, one, he was able to get into the net in the first place, right? They were pushing for the playoffs. There were only 7 games left, and the kid that had just played college hockey the week before
was their best option.
Was like, we got to put him in. This is where we're at. And then the next year, to have him be the plan as the number one goalie, listen, off those 7 games, it was a little bit more defendable. But it was always a long shot, I think, that him at that age and that experience was going to be able to play. I mean, what? I wonder what in their perfect world they were hoping for going into, not this past season, the year prior.
Him to
play 50 games?
To be 40, to be one of the very, very rare guys to show up and be that young and be good.
Right. And that was a lot to ask. And I've pointed out his numbers weren't as bad that season as you think they were. At Evolving Hockey, his goal saved above expected, like per 60 or whatever, he was 20th out of 72 goalies.
Yeah, and they've lived a lot lower than that.
This past year, he was definitely bad. But the year prior, he wasn't as bad as you think.